The next bill before us is House File 284. The clerk will report the bill.
Elioff is not there. Elioff there.
Mr. Elioff?
House File Number 284, Number 27 on General Orders, printed page number 356, an act relating to health.
There are six amendments at the desk, Mr. Elioff.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, that House File 284 be recommended to pass.
Mr. Elioff moves that when this committee do arise, that House File 284 be recommended to pass. Mr. Elioff.
Mr. Chairman, I have an amendment up there, and I move it at this particular time.
Mr. Elioff moves to amend. The clerk will report the amendment.
Elioff is moving to amend House File 284. The first engrossment is follows. Delete everything after the enacting clause and insert Section 1.
Mr. Elioff.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
You move the amendment.
House File 284 is the parental notification bill, and I want to make it clear that it's not a parental consent bill. House File 284 states that no abortion shall be performed upon an unemancipated minor until at least 48 hours within the notice of the pending operation and has been delivered. This bill, members and Mr. Chairman, has had extensive hearings in the subcommittee of the Health and Welfare Committee and also the full committee. I would like to, if I may, just walk you through the bill.
Would you like to move the amendment?
Yes, I'll move the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Elioff moves the amendment. Mr. Elioff.
Subdivision 1 is the minor's consent law, which restates the present law, making a minor's consent valid for treatment of conditions that are associated with pregnancy, venereal diseases, alcohol, and drug abuse. Subdivision 2 requires that no abortion be performed upon an emancipated minor or incompetent female until 48 hours after notice has been given to the parent of that female. And this notice can be by personal service or by certified mail. Subdivision 3 defines the parent, meaning both parents of the pregnant minor woman or a guardian or conservator. Subdivision 4 does have limitations that under this situation that no notice shall be given or required if the abortion is certified as necessary to prevent the woman's death and there is insufficient time to provide notice. Also, the abortion is authorized by the person entitled to the notice and also that no notice will be required if the pregnant woman declares she is a victim of physical abuse or neglect. Under Subdivision 5, there is a penalty and it does provide an abortion without having the required notice shall be a misdemeanor and grounds for civil action. This is the protective clause for the medical doctors. Subdivision 6 contains a savings clause which provides that if Subdivision 2 is ever enjoined by judicial order, the following procedure will become operational as paragraph C of Subdivision 2 to permit continued operation of this law. And Subdivision 7 is the severability clause providing that if any portion of the law is found invalid, the remaining provisions which can be given or even effect shall operate as law. Mr. Chairman, members, that is a summary of the bill.
Is there any discussion on the bill? On the amendment, I'm sorry. Any discussion on the amendment? Hearing none, all those in favor of the Elioff amendment indicate by saying aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. Winnier moves to amend. Has this amendment been distributed?
Yes.
Clerk will report the amendment.
Winia is moving to amend House File 284. The first engrossment is follows. Page 2, after line 8, insert.
Mr. Chairman and members, I believe there needs to be a correction in the amendment in order to make it fit with the delete everything. And I think that should be page 2 after line 7 that would take care of it. So I'd make
just
that
hold
correction.
Hold up just a moment.
That is correct. Yes.
The clerk has the amendment. Ms. Winia. Okay.
Mr. Chairman and members, the intent of this amendment is to provide one more system of notification, but a system in which a pregnant girl would have the opportunity to avail herself of the assistance of the county social services at the time that her parents are to receive the notification that she is seeking an abortion. The way the system would work is that the attending physician would be required to send the notice to the county agency that is designated to provide social services, and then it is that agency's responsibility to contact again by certified mail the parent, as defined in the bill, advising them of the need to arrange a meeting with the social service agency and their daughter within 3 days. Parents arranging that meeting would then, at that meeting, have the opportunity to discuss with their daughter her desire for an abortion. It would provide a setting in which, if there is some fear among the young woman that her parents might react violently physically, that there would be the presence of another adult who would be able to provide some kind of support, some kind of counseling that hopefully would help both the parent and the child honestly and caringly discuss the issue before them. And Mr. Speaker, if I haven't done so, I would move the amendment.
Ms. Minio moves the amendment. Any discussion on the amendment? Mr. Elioff.
Mr. Chairman, members, I oppose the amendment from the standpoint of one, I would suppose to look at one of them is the Department of Health and Welfare and their workload. I don't know if they've been advised of this, but the workload would be one reason. But more important than the workload would be the woman does have a right to an abortion, and nothing can be done or should be done to impede this decision made by this person. Now, this was held up in the lower courts in Roe versus Wade. And this waiting period does impede the abortion, the decision she has made. And as I said before, in lower courts, it has been upheld as constitutional, and they feel as though nothing should impede this decision. And therefore, members, I ask your support in defeating this amendment.
Any further discussion on the amendment? Mr. McDonald.
I was just wondering, has there been a roll call?
Not yet.
I'll request one, Mr. Chairman.
Roll call has been requested. 15 hands. Seeing 15 hands, there will be a roll call. Any further discussion? Ms. Winia.
Hey, Mr. Chairman and members, just to respond to Mr. Elias' comments, one, he suggests that the workload that this would impose on the state health or welfare department would be too great. And let me first make very clear, in case I did not in my earlier remarks, that the responsibility falls back to the county agency that has been designated to require to provide social services. Now, some of the materials that I have received indicate that already, 75% of the young women seeking abortion have already notified their parents. So we're talking about only in this bill that 25% that apparently feel some hesitancy in talking to their parents. I have spent a lot of time thinking about this bill, and I frankly have found this one of the more difficult of the abortion bills that has ever come before us, because I can understand why it is that parents feel an interest in knowing what kind of medical care their daughter is seeking. But at the same time, I think that we need to at least have some kind of concern for a young girl who is so anguished by the likely consequences of notifying that to her parents that she is frightened by the prospect of their just getting a letter in the mail, but would we prefer to have an opportunity to sit down and discuss this with them, but would like the presence of some other person, a person who has got some experience in social services, who could act as a counselor, as a facilitator, and hopefully what would be a very open and productive start at communications between this girl and her parents. And if she has been reluctant to notify them herself, that is a suggestion that there is some kind of breakdown in communications. I'm not in this amendment trying to prevent the requirement of notice, but I think it's fair to have some kind of concern for the young girl in this situation who would like to have the presence of another adult as she deals with what is going to be, in her opinion, a very difficult situation for both her and her parents.
Mr. Leo.
Mr. Chairman, members of the body, you know, she has that right to do that right now. She could, if she wanted to, this minor, talk to the doctor and call anybody she wishes. At this particular time, she can do that, call in a third party, if she wishes this. We don't need that in the bill, this particular amendment. She has that option. And I'm sure if the doctors who are out there and are competent, reliable people, and if this person did ask for this service or did ask for the third party, and she could name this person, the chances are she could get together. So I see no need for this from the standpoint she can do this right now.
Any further discussion on the Winnie Amendment? Mr. Shea.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move to amend the amendment, please.
Mr. Shea moves to amend the amendment. Mr. Shea.
I move that on line 4, strike the words the following. Strike line 5. Line 6, strike the words of this subdivision. And then continue on line 12, strike if. Strike lines 13, 14, and 15. And I would move that amendment to the amendment.
No, it's the only one we've got. If it's adopted. Yes.
The clerk will report the amendment.
Shea is moving to amend the Winnea amendment as follows. The Shea amendment to the amendment has not been distributed. In the Winnea amendment, line 4, after the comma, strike the words the following. Strike all of line 5. In line 6, strike of this subdivision. Then at the end of line 12, strike the word if. Strike all of lines 13, 14, and 15.
Mr. Shea.
Mr. Chairman, members, all this amendment does is gives the...
You wish to move the amendment?
I would like to move the amendment.
Mr. Shea moves the amendment. Mr. Shea.
Mr. Chairman and members, what this amendment does is it gives that pregnant woman the option of having this procedure take place, but it does not... allow this procedure to fulfill the requirements of the law. That's all it says.
Ms. Winnea.
Mr. Chairman, I would oppose the amendment, and I guess in particular I would oppose the striking of that last sentence of the amendment. Representative Elioff earlier alluded to a concern that he had about drawing out the whole procedure to such an extent that it would make the whole bill unconstitutional. And I share that concern, and I've tried to structure this amendment so that there are some pretty tight time limits within which all the parties have to act. And my concern is that if we have the requirement, as the language would read with the Shea Amendment, so that the notice goes out, but there's no response from that parent, how long do we then wait? And then do we create the situation in which I think the court is likely to say that we have set up a procedure that is so long and so cumbersome that we have effectively denied the minor the access to the abortion, which the court seems to be saying she does have. And so that's why I've put that language in there, Mr. Shea, to try to push the procedure along. I would hope that, you know, any parent who is claiming to be concerned about their daughter upon receiving a certified letter from the social service agency in the county that they're desiring of having a meeting would care enough to call up and arrange that meeting within 3 days.
Any further discussion on the amendment?
Mr. Chairman,
to the amendment? Mr. Elioff.
I oppose the Shea Amendment also. I oppose both amendments.
Mr. Zube.
Mr. Chairman, would Representative Winia yield, please?
Ms. Winia,
yield. Representative Winia, in your amendment, on the ninth line, you state in here that the person would, or the parents would be contacted by certified mail. Let's assume for the moment that the people are down in Florida, no one's home, certified mail comes and it's not accepted. What happens?
Well, Mr. Zube, I think that the same thing would happen there as would happen in the event that that as under the Elioff bill, where there is the requirement of the sending of the letter by certified mail, and if that letter is sent during a period of time where the parents are not there, then there's no response.
Mr. Zube.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Winia, as I read the original bill, I don't think certified mail is the means by which they're contacted. I understand that there's a personal contact made there.
Any further discussion on the amendment to the amendment? The Shea amendment to the Winnie amendment. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye. Those opposed? Amendment is not adopted. We have then the Winnie Amendment before us. Any further discussion on the Winnie Amendment? A roll call has been asked for. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, the clerk will take the roll. Clerk will close the roll. There being 86 nays, 30 ayes, the amendment is not adopted. Brendel moves to amend. Clerk will report the amendment.
Brendel is moving to amend House File 284, the first engrossment as follows. Page 2, line 22, delete.
Mr. Brendel.
Mr. Chairman, I move the amendment.
Mr. Brendel moves the amendment. Mr. Brendel.
Okay, now, Mr. Chairman, I think we're going to have to change the wording of this to fit the strike everything amendment, which Mr.
I wonder if I might Elioff suggest that Ms. Kahn, Ms. Hokanson, Ms. Byrne, and Mr. Elioff, please check your amendments that are still at the desk. To make sure that they fit so we don't have any delay when we get to them. Mr. Brendel.
Okay. Let's see. Oh, rats. Anybody got my amendment? Okay, it was on line 2, page 2, line 22. I think instead of that, it's page 2, line 25 and line 27, and instead of lines 22 and 27. And then page 2, line 32, delete the period, insert or. Page 2, after line 32, insert the new language, the last two lines of my amendment. So I'll go through that again. The amendment is page 2, line 27, delete or. Page 2, line 32, delete the period and insert or. Page 2, after line 32, insert the lines 6 and 7 of my amendment.
Clerk, have the amendment?
Yes.
Clerk will report the amendment.
The Brandel amendment has been changed to read as follows. Page 2, line 27, delete or. Page 2, line 32, delete the period and insert semicolon or. Page 2, after line 32, insert.
Mr. Brandel.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I move that amendment now.
Mr. Brandel moves the amendment. Mr. Brandel.
Mr. Chairman and members, any concerned legislator is troubled by this issue. I know that for me, it is the most difficult issue of the session. I know also that Representative Elioff has worked very hard on this question. He and I have sat together not only in here, but in committee for long hours of deliberation on the issue. He has made a responsible and a conscientious effort to deal with this question. I do believe that there remains a fundamental dilemma at the heart of the question, and that dilemma remains in the bill as it stands. On the one hand, we all would want to involve parents in a question of this kind. I am a parent of three teenage children, and I would very much want to be part of a decision of this sort with them. None of us would want our child to go through a matter of this seriousness by herself. On the other hand, we heard eloquent, moving testimony of beatings, of girls ostracized from their families in situations of this sort, and in some cases this testimony told of times years and years, even decades ago, and it was clear that when that had happened in their families, when parents had not been, clearly had not been, the appropriate adults to involve in the matter, it had had a lasting and evidently, in some cases, a lifelong effect on those women. The amendment attempts to meet both of these concerns. On the one hand, it ensures the family would be involved. The girl, the young woman, could choose if she wanted to bring her aunt with her, to bring her grandmother with her, instead of her parent. I think if we all are serious about this and we search our own souls, we know of situations in which the parents would not be the appropriate people to be involved, and yet, as I say, we would all want to have the family involved. So it does involve the family by allowing the young woman to bring with her some other adult relative than her parents. But on the other hand, it helps prevent that situation where involvement of the parent could lead to the kind of ostracism, the kind of abuse, the kind of beatings of which we heard eloquent testimony. I very much hope to have your support.
Any further discussion on the Brandel Amendment? Mr. Elioff.
Mr. Chairman, in the subcommittee, in the full committee, we discussed this already, and I can't say it's all bad, but I do believe very strongly that the parents of the pregnant minor should be the ones who should be notified. I do not believe that the burden should be put on other relatives. And I feel very strongly that it's the parent or the parents of the pregnant minor that really should be the ones involved. After all, they're the ones that we're trying to get to, the ones to help their daughter, their pregnant minor, and therefore I oppose the Brandel Amendment. As I said before, we had this in the subcommittee and the full committee, and I appreciate your support. I'd like to ask for a roll call, Mr. Chairman.
15 hands, ask for a roll call. Seeing 15 hands, there will be a roll call.
Mr. Dean.
Mr. Chairman, will the author of the amendment yield?
Mr. Brandel yield. Mr. Dean.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Brandel, can you tell me what the definition, what the legal definition of a relative would be if this amendment went on?
Brandel.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Dean, we talked about this as well in committee and concluded that we were talking about older siblings, aunts or uncles, or grandparents.
Mr. Speaker, Representative Brandel, is that clearly defined in the statutes, or is that just the surmise of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Dean, I have to say that it is the surmise of the committee. It is not in statute, this definition.
Oh, Mr. Speaker, Representative Brandel, I'd like to vote for this amendment, but... A relative could be a second cousin or almost any person, and there's no strict definition. I guess it would be up to the person interpreting it at the time, and that bothers me, I guess, that the amendment seems to be rather loosely drafted, and I guess I'd hesitate to vote for it, not knowing exactly what the language means here. In terms of what a relative is.
Brandel. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Dean. Mr. Chairman, perhaps we could lay it over for a minute. It's an easy matter for us to include the exhaustive list of relatives which you asked about. And perhaps we could do that and return to the discussion in a minute.
Well, there are several other amendments here. You can withdraw it and offer another amendment if you like. Amendments withdrawn. Mr. Conoffer is following amendment. Clerk, report the amendment.
Con is moving to amend House File 284. The first engrossment is follows. Page 2, after line 8, insert C.
Mr. Con.
Mr. Speaker, members of the House, Representative Elioff, as I understand, the purpose of this bill is to involve the parents in the medical care of the child and to make sure that parental input comes into that. But it does deny the right of one set of parents, and that is a parent who believes that the medical treatment of their child will be inhibited by having a notification provision. What this amendment does is recognize the right of parents who wish to be notified if their child is about to have some form of medical treatment by allowing them to have their names listed and then to have notifications sent to those parents. It also recognizes the right of those parents who wish to ensure the best medical treatment of their child by not having that notification, because they believe that notification will interfere with that by not being notified. So I believe that this amendment deals with the people whose rights you are afraid are being impeded, and yet allows the rights of those of those who think that that notification interferes with the right of their child to have decent medical treatment. And I guess I really think you ought to accept this as a friendly amendment to the bill.
Mr. Elioff.
Mr. Chairman, members, I do not accept this amendment.
Mrs. Kahn.
Mr. Speaker, Representative Elioff yield to a question.
Elioff yield. Mrs. Kahn.
What is the problem with this amendment, and how would this amendment interfere with your bill?
Elioff.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, I don't like it, and I don't want it part of the bill.
Further discussion?
Mrs.
Kahn?
Yeah. Well, Mr. Speaker, I'm really sorry that you can't give any better reason than that, but I guess I believe that this amendment should be adopted, and I certainly think it will add to the bill. I don't think it will subtract from the bill at all, and I think it really solves the problem of parental rights very neatly. It also deals with the right of the parent who believes that notification will interfere with the medical treatment of their child. And I guess, I guess I'm a strong believer in the rights of parents to make these kinds of decisions, and so I guess in order to support that, I guess, Mr. Speaker, I would ask for a roll call vote on this amendment.
Seeing 15 hands, be a roll call. Further discussion? If not, question recurs in the motion of Mrs. Kahn to amend. Clerk, take the roll. Clerk, close the roll. Being 11 ayes and 99 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Mrs. Hulkinson offers the following amendment. Clerk, report the amendment.
Hulkinson is moving to amend House File 284 as follows. Page 2.
Mrs. Hulkinson. Excuse me, Mrs. Hulkinson, a moment. Mrs. Hulkinson, the amendment we had here, I understand you replaced with another amendment?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, I didn't hear you.
We had an amendment at the desk. I understand from the desk personnel that you've replaced that with a different amendment. Is that correct?
That's correct. It is the same amendment, but it's been put in order to fit the amended bill now. It's the same thing, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. All right, quick report the amendment.
Hulkinson moves to amend House File number 284 as amended as follows. Page 1, line 22, delete the.
Mrs. Hulkinson.
Mr. Chairman, if this is difficult for people to follow, I'd be amenable to waiting till the other amendments were there. But if they would look at the first engrossment, that might be helpful. I think it's going to be handed out now. At any rate, what it does is this is a parental notification bill. I've indicated that I support this bill on many occasions. I'm not going to delineate my reasons for support of this bill. But it's been a real source of concern of mine ever since this bill was heard in Health and Welfare that this notice would be delivered to the parent's usual place of abode and left with a person of suitable age and discretion residing therein other than the pregnant woman. Quite simply, I think that leaves far too much discretion to someone to be ascertaining what that suitable age is, and that discretion on the part of the other parent. This veers considerably from notification to the parent. Furthermore, on the delivery required, notice may be made by certified mail receipted for by the person specified for delivery in Clause A. In other words, as I understand Representative Elioff's bill, the person who is making this certified mail delivery there then determines who should be of suitable age and discretion to receive that correspondence. I feel that by accepting the amendment that I'm offering here, that the bill then comes back to the original thrust and direction of what we're doing here. We can truly say that it's a parental notification bill. At this point, it's a parental notification bill and much more. I would hope that Representative Elioff would accept this amendment.
Mr. Elioff.
Mr. Chairman, as I understand it, on certified mail, which of course necessitates a signature, and of course is addressed to specific people, persons, it's been past practice, as I understand it, that if this mail is delivered to that particular residence, the person that may be there is and has been in the past signed for this particular piece of mail. And I think just by past precedent that this the people in that particular household have signed for it, this certified mail, I do believe that the discretion by the person who is delivering this piece of mail can be upheld in this case. And I do believe that the person who is going to be delivering this particular piece of mail would in his own right use a discretion as he would otherwise. So I urge your support in defeating this amendment.
Mr. Astaf.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Elioff yield to a question.
Elioff yield, Mr. Astaf.
Representative Elioff, being an old postal clerk that I was during my college days, I can only state to you that with five brothers and one sister living in my house, certified mail got signed by six different people at my address. Now, is the bill dealing with the parents or with all my peers?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Astaf, as the bill says that the notice may be delivered by certified mail, received for the by the person specified for delivery in the clause, it can be received for by other people than the people in that particular household.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Elioff, I just stated to you that six of us could sign for either return receipt requested or certified mail. It's a practice we do commonly. Do you know for a fact, sir, that the U.S. Postal Service says that certified mail can only be received by the addressee?
Mr. Elioff.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know that.
Mr. Chairman, I submit to you, Mr. Elioff, that Mrs. Hokanson's scenario is correct. And do you now have any brother or sister, aunt and uncle, or anyone else that is of age that lives in that abode, the ability to sign for that and probably open the mail and find out what's happening?
Oh, you're all wet.
Mr. Vitaya.
Mr. Chairman, I have had the privilege to receive lots of certified mail that any one of seven people in my household could sign for and receive. And I want you to know that every piece of certified mail addressed to me was opened by me. And every piece of certified mail addressed to my wife has been opened by my wife. I presume there are some common courtesies that exist in households.
Ms. Platts.
Mr. Chairman and members, would Representative Elioff I support your bill, but I have some concerns that Representative Hokanson has brought up here. I have always signed for mail in my family or anybody that answers the door, and I come from a family of 9 children. The point is that a lot of times parents might call and say, why don't you open up a letter if it's certified? Maybe they're worried that somebody died or, you know, they need to get money someplace or something like that. And an abortion is a very serious thing. If you want a relationship between a child and their parents to be improved, I think that this might jeopardize it. Also, a postman really can't use his discretion when he doesn't even know what's in the what he's delivering. So I would hope that maybe you could support this amendment. I don't think that it would hurt your bill at all.
Mr. Chairman, members, I think I still maintain my position. I do believe that there's credibility in households that what is private and signed or delivered to certain people will be acknowledged by those people in that household.
We're on the Hokanson Amendment. Ms. Hokanson.
Mr. Chairman, just briefly and specifically in response to Representative Battaglia, if we could have households and guarantees based on the courtesies extended and practiced in your household, fine, leave it there then. We have no guarantee when we're covering the gamut of all households and the interrelationships between all family members, the parents, the girls, the siblings, and anybody else, apparently, who happens to be of suitable age and discretion. That's far different from saying, yes, but courtesies are extended in our house. I think they are in mine, too. I think they are in probably most of the households here. But it's not true all over. It's simply not true. And I submit this amendment, of all amendments, without making a judgment on some of the others to come, is truly not going to jeopardize this bill. It's not going to. It's a good amendment. And it clarifies that, or it's just opening a real can of worms. It's a loophole. It ought not be in there this way.
Mr. Stop.
Mr. Chairman, would Representative Ostoff yield?
Mr. Ostoff yield. Mr. Stump.
If this amendment was passed, how would that affect the timeline? I believe the bill itself states that there's 48 hours. Would the postman leave and come back, or how do they do that?
Mr. Ostoff.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not referring to the bill and its timeline. I'm only asked about the scenario Representative Hokanson laid out. I quite honestly don't have the bill in front of me, Representative Stump, so I couldn't tell you what the timeline is.
Well, would Mr. Chairman, would Representative Hokanson yield?
Ms. Hokanson yield. Mr. Stump?
I would like to state the same question. How, if your amendment is adopted, how would the timeline that's in the bill be affected?
Ms. Hokanson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, you're talking about the 24 hours after the time, that particular language there. I'd have to look at that because that's been a change that was made on this strike everything amendment here. And I've hardly had time to digest half of that since it hit the floor here. You have to give me a minute to look at that, really.
Mr. Stump?
Well, I have some concern. I think the amendment is a good amendment because that same thing happens in our household. We can get some registered mail, and any one of a number of people can sign for it. I would like to know before I would vote on the amendment, though, how the overall bill would be affected as far as the timeline.
Mr. McDonald.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to address this amendment. I recognize the amendment as well-intentioned and possibly able to alleviate your genuine concern. My understanding is, however, that the amendment may add an extra burden in making delivery and thereby could render the bill unconstitutional.
Ms.
Ms. Hokinson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McDonald, could you be specific with respect to the unconstitutionality?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. According to legal advice, if notification is overly burdensome to be delivered, that would place too great a burden upon the persons who must notify parents, and thereby is in danger of being ruled unconstitutional.
Ms. Hawkinson.
Should I ask him?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McDonald, as you can see, I'm getting some advice around here, none of which appears to put much credibility in what you've just said. Really, if you're talking about burdensome, came from someplace here, wouldn't it be very easy to put it in the newspaper? That wouldn't be a burden on anybody. I mean, I don't mean to be facetious, but I don't see that in terms of unconstitutionality. And I'd, with all due respect, Representative McDonald, I'd like to see the constitutionality, unconstitutionality argument clarified by, let's say, a lawyer anyhow.
McDonald.
Well, Mr. Chairman, in that regard, since there is obviously some ambiguity here and some question on it, I suspect that we'd be safer in not putting the amendment on at this time, and we could clear that up for both of us.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McDonald, if this amendment doesn't go on, it leaves this bill far more ambiguous than if it were on. No doubt about it. Mr. Chairman, I would simply renew my request for a positive vote on this. I think we've discussed it enough. I would hope those who have indicated that they support parental notification will take a long, hard look at it in terms of what this would do over the long haul, and particularly in jeopardizing the very relationship that you want between the girl and her parents. It could have absolutely the opposite effect. That's not what we want.
Question recurs. Mr. Jacobs.
Mr. Chairman, members of the body, I just want to bring one occasion that I had an opportunity to receive a certified letter. It was delivered, the postman delivered it to our house on a Friday. The problem is we were not home, so he left a card in the mailbox on a Friday that would state that I have a certified letter and I should stop at the post office to pick it up. The problem arose. The post office is not open on Saturday. I arrived home Friday after the post office had closed. It was not open Saturday. It was not open Sunday. So then it was the following Monday before I had an opportunity to go down to the post office. I'm concerned about the delay in this particular amendment. Now, I know that Representative Hokinson means well, but I am concerned about the delay, the time element, as Representative Stump pointed out earlier.
Mr. Chairman, in reference to Representative Jacobs, I do have an amendment here that I believe would take care of that particular situation. And what you're referring to, I believe, on page 2, line 5. I know we're on, Mr. Speaker, or Chairman, I know we're on Representative Hokinson's amendment, but I don't know if that ties in with the point you're trying to make, Representative Jacobs, or whatever. But I do have an amendment that takes care of that particular situation. And I would ask for a roll call, Mr. Chairman.
15 hands. Seeing 15 hands be a roll call. Ms. Platts.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'd just like to point out one thing, and I talked to Representative Stumpf about this, and that is that when I get certified mail and I'm not home to receive it, I always have a postcard in my mailbox saying, go to the post office and you have certified mail, Either I go that day or I go in the morning. So I don't think it would affect the 48-hour notification. Also, I think that if this amendment is not adopted, it might have a negative effect of what Representative Eliaf wants to do. For example, and I support your bill wholeheartedly, but if a sister or a brother could open that mail, right or wrong, they could open that mail, and if they were very close to the person that was having an abortion, they may tear up that letter and the parents are never going to know. And I think the parents' rights should be protected here and they should be able to get the letter.
Mrs. Clark.
Mr. Chairman, would Representative Eliaf yield?
Eliaf yield. Mrs. Clark.
Representative Eliaf, did I hear you state in your explanation of the bill that there is a severability clause in the bill now?
Eliaf.
Representative Eliaf says, yes, there is that severability clause. Then in response to Representative McDonald's concern about constitutionality, I suggest that even if this section is found unconstitutional, it would not jeopardize the rest of the bill, and for that reason support Representative Hokanson's amendment.
Mrs. Pearson.
Mr. Chairman, will Mr. Eliaf yield?
Mr. Eliaf yield, Mrs. Pearson.
Mr. Eliaf, as your bill is now written, if that certified mail comes to the household and it's been determined that someone not of suitable age or discretion has received that certified letter, who's responsible? Is the mailman responsible?
Mr. Eliaf.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Peterson, that mailman, in my mind, would not, using good sound judgment, give it to anybody in that particular household who he didn't think was of suitable age or proper, let's say, attitude, whatever. I don't think he would give that and sign that letter over. I mean, if you're talking about a person 5 years old or something, I would think that a reliable person would not, the postman, I mean, would not give that particular piece of mail to that person.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Eliaf, how is the mailman going to know that the certified mail is containing a notice that the child wants an abortion? It could be any other kind of piece of certified mail.
You're absolutely right. He doesn't know what's in there. Nobody knows what's in there other than the person sending.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Eliaf, is other certified mail, must that be delivered to a person of suitable age and discretion?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Peterson, I don't know that.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Eliaf, that's the reason that I'm going to be supporting Representative Hokanson's amendment, because I think that the mailman or mailwoman in this particular case is not going to know what they're delivering with the certified mail, and in essence could be held, possibly be held responsible. There's no way they know what's contained in that letter.
Strastaff.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Eliaf, yield to a question. Representative Eliaf, I just have a basic question, since I know the Postal Service used to be a federal department, but now it's a private agency. Can the state of Minnesota regulate the U.S. mails? Mr. Chairman, the reason I ask that question obviously deals to the very heart of the Hokanson Amendment, and obviously almost to the whole heart of whether parental notification is in fact a reality that we can tell the U.S. Postal System who they can deliver it to and when they can deliver it. Because quite frankly, Mr. Eliaf, I don't think we can.
Question recurs in the Hokanson Amendment. Mrs. Hokanson.
Mr. Chairman, members, I really believe that some of the questions that have been asked and some of the responses to them clarify some of the concerns that apparently were inherent in the amendment I offered. For one thing, the severability clause is there, which deals with the potential unconstitutionality, which I doubt that it is anyhow, but that takes care of that. I think that the way it is written now, that the question presented by Representative Peterson in terms of the liability on the part of the person who gives it to someone who is not of the appropriate age and discretion leaves that person very vulnerable legally, morally, with respect to this problem, perhaps. But those were the primary concerns here, and I think they've been answered. And again, I would repeat that this This amendment is offered in good faith. It will not jeopardize this bill. It will not jeopardize it. If it did, I wouldn't offer it. It'll help it. It preserves the integrity, the thrust and direction of Representative Elioff's bill. But we've got real problems if we don't accept this amendment.
Got a final score, North Star 7, Calgary 4. There's no further discussion. Clerk, take the roll on the amendment. Clerk, close the roll. In 46 ayes and 67 nays, the amendment's not adopted. Mr. Elioff offers the following amendment. Clerk, report the amendment. Elioff is moving to amend House File 284 as amended as follows. Page 2. Line 5, delete everything. Mr. Elioff.
Mr. Chairman, members of the body, on line 5, after I want to delete lines 6 and 7 and insert time of delivery shall be deemed to occur at 12 o'clock noon on the next day, and the reason for this is I think Representative Jacobs hit this one before, is that there are some areas where the Postal Service is not in operation on weekends, so we would count the, as it says here, the time of delivery shall be deemed to occur at 12 o'clock noon on the next day on which the regular mail delivery service takes place.
We wish to move it, Mr. Elioff. Mr. Elioff, you wish to move the amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I move the amendment.
Mr. Elioff moves adoption of the amendment. Question recurs. All those in favor indicate by saying aye. Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Mr. Brandel offers the following amendment. Clerk, report the amendment.
Brandel is moving to amend House File 284 as amended as follows. Page 2, line 27.
Mr. Brandel.
Mr. Chairman, members, recall that a few minutes ago we discussed this amendment. The argument is that we have in the bill a conscientious and responsible and serious attempt to deal with an issue, but there's a fundamental dilemma remaining. We both would want to ensure that the family of a girl is involved in a situation like this, but on the other hand, we'd also not want to force a situation where beatings or ostracism from the family might result. And we heard enough moving, heartrending testimony in the subcommittee on this issue to convince me, and I'm sure others on the committee, that this can be a problem. Representative Dean suggested that he would like to have a clearer definition of who is a relative. There is something to be said for leaving that up to the selection of the pregnant girl. On the other hand, I can understand people's wanting to have a precise definition. We had earlier in committee, in fact, the definition of the sort that stands before you in the amendment. That is a mother, father, grandparent, sibling, older sibling, aunt or uncle. In doing it this way, I think we do confront this dilemma in a reasonable fashion, and I urge your support.
Mr. Elioff.
Mr. Chairman, members, the only change in this amendment is the definition of who an adult relative is, and I oppose this amendment.
Question recurs in the motion of Mr. Brandel to amend. All those in favor indicate by saying aye. Opposed, nay.
Motion's not adopted. Ms. Byrne offers the following amendment. Clerk, report the amendment.
Byrne is moving to amend House File 284 as amended as follows. Page 1, line 22, after the parent.
Ms. Byrne. Ms. Byrne.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'd like to move the amendment.
Ms. Byrne moves adoption of the amendment. Ms. Byrne.
Mr. Chairman, this is the amendment that deals with the reporting to the father of the child and the parents of the father of the child, the putative father. I think it's time, and I think it's about time that we talked about this issue. I think let's take the time, let's chew this over, let's chew it over good, and bring it up. If nothing else results from this, I would hope in the end that there's a bit of consciousness raising that's involved. And I'd like to go ahead and explain the amendment. I offered the amendment in committee, and at that time I asked MCCL to present to me the reasons as to why it is they opposed the amendment. And I thought there were good reasons. I think there were indeed some constitutional questions, and since that time I have sat down with counsel and have gone over the reasons and the problems concerned with the constitutionality of this of the amendment. And the language that's on from line 8 through 15 hopefully addresses the problems of constitutionality. And I might add that insofar as there is severability and represented in the bill at this time, that even if this amendment had been found to be unconstitutional, that it would be severed. I guess the thing that has to be, it's got to strike you. And there isn't anybody here that could challenge my pro-life voting record. I have a strong and a good pro-life voting record. There's something that really bothers me. What we're doing with this bill is we are requiring that the parents of the girl be notified, but we are saying nothing to the parents of the boy. And I think that we have to begin to think that there needs to be addressed the problem of equal responsibility. That child was created in an action that required two. Some time ago, Representative Hokanson introduced an advisory bill to study the whole problem of teenage pregnancy in this state. We had many hearings throughout the state, in every part, a half a dozen hearings. It was excellent input and testimony from many different groups of people. One of the conclusions, or I should say one of the emergent themes is what they were called for committee discussion, dealt with male responsibility. And I just want to read you some of the statement here. The committee received testimony regarding the lack of attention to the males in adolescent pregnancies. Both the peer group and the parents of teenage males perpetrate the double standard that places the burden for sexual responsibility primarily on the female. As a result, the male seldom takes responsibility for sexual activity and often does not take responsibility for parenthood. There's a couple of other things here that need to be taken into consideration. First of all, in a court case study, recognizes that the male interest, there is indeed a male interest in procreation, even though it does not outweigh the woman's interest in procreation. This is in the Doe versus Doe case. Another important consideration here is that in order for a woman who has born a child to receive any kind of child support, or to receive AFDC from welfare, paternity has got to be established. You know, in order for the mother to receive any kind of financial assistance at all or child support, paternity has got to be established. But turning back to some of the concerns about the constitutional question here, one of the things that's very important to be addressed and to determine whether or not that this amendment would meet the constitutional test are two things. One of them, it has to be reasonably related to the preservation and protection of maternal health. And secondly, it deals with it has to be a strongly stated, the interest of the state has got to be strongly stated as to why the state feels that it would be necessary for the father and the parents of the father to be notified. And I guess one would ask to know what, again, would be the state interest in requiring notification. It could be that the state has a strong interest in encouraging putative fathers and their parents to assist the minor woman and her family in making the decision whether to continue or terminate the pregnancy. That language is stated in my amendment, which states that the putative father or his parents or both shall become involved only to the extent of offering or providing emotional, financial, or other assistance or support to the minor woman. The assistance could be in the form, as I stated, of emotional support, and I stated that. The requirement could further more responsibility on the part of the male partner in considering and dealing with the consequences of his actions. What you're doing here is it's an unfair distribution of responsibility here. There's absolutely nothing in the bill that states that the male in his actions should assume any kind of consequence for his action. This increased responsibility could be seen as a rational and legitimate effort by the state to deal with the problem of increasing teenage pregnancy. And I think that in stating the state interest as to why there should be parental notification of the male would indeed meet the constitutional question. I guess there's a few other facts here I guess I would also like to share with you. It is estimated that 59% of teenage males in the United States have had sexual intercourse. The macho view of women is widespread among male teens, and the double standard still exists. In a study recently conducted in New York, 45% of the females said that their fathers would be very upset if they found out that they were having sex, while only 22% of the males thought their fathers would be very upset. 65% of the males reported that their fathers would either be neutral or react in a positive way. Only 7% thought their fathers would suggest such a thing as birth control. The parents' tacit approval of sexual activity combined with a lack of concern about birth control perpetrate in teenage males an attitude of sexual and contraceptive irresponsibility. It is the parents' double standards that places the burden for responsibility solely on the female. The boy seldom, again, takes responsibility for contraception and usually does not take any responsibility for parenthood. It's not fair. It simply is not fair. I think that with my amendment and the efforts that I have made to ensure that they withstand a constitutional test is a step in the right direction. I urge your support.
Mr. Chairman, members, I think we've gone through this already. When Representative Byrne talks about equal responsibility, I'd like to see how we define that, really. You know, equal responsibility, is that paying half of the bills, or is that, I just don't know what it is. We've gone through that already. And I think the idea of paying the money financial situation, I think you allude more to a birth than an abortion, if I understood that correctly. We're talking about a minor woman who is going to notify her parent that she is having an abortion. And how difficult it is, you know, to say who the father is. Very difficult. Let's say a person is 30 or 40 years old. Do we go out and notify this person's parent? Do we, it's very difficult at times to prove who the father is. The sexual act may have been with three or four or five different people, and the girl, by her own accord, may not want to reveal the situation or in any way name the father or the possible father. If I understand it correctly, even in blood tests, it's very difficult, unless there's a live birth, that the father or the parent can be determined. And this, at most, is very difficult. And of course, suppose the girl refuses to name a putative father or a putative parent.
And then I guess the question I ask, can she be denied an abortion? So I say that for these reasons, I think that we should look at this very hard, and equal responsibility. I can't see how, you know, by the parents of the supposed father, the putative parent, can really make this an equal responsible thing.
Mr. Stahl.
Representative Burnfield.
Burnfield, Mr. Stahl.
Peggy, I've got a dictionary in front of me, and I'm trying to figure out putative father. Is that, according to the dictionary, it's just the supposed father. Is that, what does that have any legal definition? Is that been decided in a court that indeed he is the father?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stahl, that is the term that's used in family law. That means alleged father.
Stahl.
But has it been established legally that that is the accused father? In other words, could he be charged with punitive father? Could he be charged with child support and those type of things?
Byrne.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stahl, indeed he can. And that's my point, is that in order for there to be any child support given in the care of that child, that the paternity would have to be established legally.
Okay, so we have established a paternity in the case before.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
We have established paternity.
Well, Mr. Chairman, once you've established paternity, then the father is no longer putative, the reported father, because then it's known indeed, judicially determined that the putative father is indeed the father.
Well, Peggy, that's what I'm trying to get straight in my mind. I'm not an attorney. Is the putative father considered legally to be the father with your amendment, or is he just accused of being the father?
Byrne.
Mr. Chairman, putative is the reported father. It is not the judicially determined in a court of law that this is the legal father. That's paternity.
Mr. Stahl. Mrs. Hawkinson.
Mr. Chairman and members, I couldn't agree with Representative Byrne more with respect to the need for male responsibility in these issues. She, as well as, excuse me, many other members, were involved in the interim studies on teenage pregnancy. She's quoted to you some of the emerging themes out of there, one of them being on male responsibility. However, this particular amendment of Representative Burns, I submit, is not going to do what she wants it to do. I raise the question of how would notification of the putative father's parents really assist this young girl at this stage of her pregnancy? I can see involving the putative father, and I suppose his parents, if somebody feels it will be helpful to the situation, in terms of establishing paternity, as you've mentioned, determining child support, and in general long-range planning once the decision has been made to have the baby. But I cannot see any real reason that would benefit anyone, and more specifically, Representative Byrne, the girl, for involving the putative father and his parents on an abortion notification. I do not believe that this amendment does what you intend it to do.
Byrne.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I tried to state in the language as nearly as possible what the compelling state interest would be for notifying the parent's father. The putative father, his parents, or both shall become involved only to the extent of offering or providing emotional, financial, or other assistance or support to the minor woman. And secondly, again, we're not even talking about the right of the father. The courts have identified that there is an interest that the father has with regards to the paternity or the involvement of a child of procreation. That child is half his. It's half his. I mean, who's speaking to the rights of the father with regards to, being involved and wanting to give some kind of support? And secondly, another thing, I thought the whole reason for this bill in many ways was to sort of encourage and was sort of a statement to encourage a girl to have a child. You know, in many ways, I guess I'd sort of like to have thought that that's what this was about, and that's one of the reasons why we had this bill, is to see if we can't prevent abortions from occurring. And but I'd still like to think that the involvement of the fathers would be helpful, and indeed it states that that's the only involvement that they would have.
Mr. McDonald.
Mr. Chairman, first of all, I would like to request a roll call vote.
15 hands. Seeing 15 hands be a roll call. Mr. McDonald.
And then secondly, I do not think there's a need for a great deal of debate because the matter is very simple. The bill is merely to allow two things to happen. Number one, that the parents be notified so that they can exercise their constitutional right as parents to be caring for the medical welfare of their child, and also so that they can counsel with their child. And I would suggest that the parents of an alleged father would not be able nor willing to counsel with a child that is not their own. So the amendment does not get at the core of the problem, which Ms. Burns legitimately talks about, and that is male responsibility. And maybe we need to deal with that in some other way, in some legislation at some time, because it certainly is a matter in which our society needs to change its attitudes. But this amendment doesn't get at the problem at all, and let's just vote it off.
Mr. Brandle.
Mr. Chairman, members, I listened carefully to the arguments that have been made against this amendment, and I say this with due consideration. I'm appalled by at least two of the arguments that were made. Mr. Elioff has suggested to us two reasons. One, that it's difficult to identify the father, and others might like to speak to that question. But the other, he said, was that since we're only speaking about an abortion here and not about a live birth, it ought not to be necessary to involve the young man in this situation. And I believe that the appropriate word to describe that is appalling. This is a matter of immense significance, and it ought to be a matter of immense significance. And if it's not a matter of immense significance to a young man, then involving his parents in this to help him become a more responsible person who does take a situation like this more seriously ought to be something we ought to take into consideration in deciding how we're going to vote on this amendment. Secondly, Mr. McDonald has just told us that the parents of the father would, he said, quote, not be able or willing to involve themselves in this matter. Ask yourselves as parents whether you would not want to ensure that your son would act responsibly in a situation like this. I admit, and we all know, that in some ways it's a more serious issue for our daughters, but not to vote for this amendment is to add to a history of sexism, and that's the word, of indiscriminate treatment, different treatment, in very like situations between young men and young women, of encouraging irresponsible behavior on the part of young men, but expecting that young women are going to be treated differently. That is a double standard that we ought not to endorse. And regardless of whether one believes that this bill overall is a good bill or a bad bill, the amendment is clearly an appropriate amendment to add to this bill.
Strachan.
Well, briefly, members, I sit on that same interim study relating to the responsibility of that male, and I concur with Peggy in regard to making that male more responsible. But Peggy, or Representative Byrne, I'm going to have to vote against and urge other members to vote likewise. Here, what we're talking about is a time in which that girl needs support. I do not believe during this period of time, including, as Representative Hokanson mentioned, I don't believe that this would be a time of encouragement for that girl. I think, though, that that man is very responsible.
Ms. Byrne.
Well, Mr. Chairman and members, you know, if parents had assumed the responsibility of teaching their children about sex and had educated them within a proper framework of ethics and morals, you know, there wouldn't be a need for this kind of legislation at all. You go through, as I was growing up, you almost hear these old pat phrases all the time. You know, what's right for Jill is right for Jack. You know, you play, you pay, and it takes two to tangle, and he who dances must play the piper. But, you know, we don't practice that at all. You know, we really don't. You know, it's an incredibly lopsided kind of, situation. And I don't see the state of Minnesota in any way taking any kind of a position. You know, we don't require any kind of sex education in the schools. You know, we simply assume that the parents are going to teach the children that the proper kind of vows. And the parents don't do that. You know, I think that now's the time for us to make a statement, and a yes vote for my amendment is the step in the right direction.
Question recurs in the motion of Ms. Byrne to amend. Clerk, take the roll. Clerk, close the roll. Read 26 ayes and 82 nays. The amendment is not adopted. Question recurs in the motion, Mr. Elioff, that when this committee do arise, House File 284 be recommended to pass. Mr. Greenfield.
Mr. Chairman, was the Representative Elioff yield?
Mr. Elioff yield. Mr. Greenfield.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Elioff, a couple of interesting points about this bill. First of all, the notification procedure, which we talked about earlier in the amendment, that you still have in the bill, you mentioned it was something that's been used before and works. Could you tell me what that is patterned after, since I know of no other notification for a similar kind of thing that exists in the statutes?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greenfield, I didn't go to any specific bill or any specific type of legislation that was passed that this refers to. I made a statement that it, in the general household, that this procedure is practiced.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Elioff, isn't that in civil law, like in lawsuit notifications of lawsuits and things like that, that this notice comes from?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greenfield, not necessarily, no. Could be other things.
Thank you. I do. Mr. Chairman, Representative Elioff, we look at something else. Are you somewhat worried that Subdivision 2 is unconstitutional? Mr. Chairman, Representative Elioff, do you have some problem that you think Subdivision 2, starting on page 1, line 14, continues to page 2, line 7, has some constitutional problems?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Greenfield, I don't have any reason to believe it, no.
Mr. Greenfield.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Elioff, then why do we have Subdivision 6? Which says that if this law is temporarily or permanently restrained or enjoined by judicial order, Subdivision 2 shall be enforced as if the following were part of it. It's a rather strange way to write the law. The law is X unless the court finds it unconstitutional, in which case X means Y. It's a rather strange construction for a piece of legislation.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greenfield, the way I can answer that is that at no time can you rest assured whatever the courts may decide. Therefore, under this particular subdivision 6, if one part were rendered unconstitutional, the other would remain intact.
Mr. Chairman, members, this is an amazing construction of a piece of law, but the reason is fairly simple, and you might as well understand in all likelihood, under the law of the United States as interpreted by the Supreme Court, when you vote for this, the notification isn't just the parents. It will include subdivision 6, which isn't out to go to judges. We wouldn't allow earlier on this floor the option of dealing with near relatives. But in fact, the whole law is based on the U.S. Supreme Court decision related to a Utah law, which was a very narrow decision. And I have it here if you'd like to read it, and I won't bother to go through it since I doubt if it'll change any great votes. But this section will be found when the right case comes up unconstitutional. I don't know whether subdivision 6 will end up with a constitutional provision that will hold or not. It's far more complicated than anything that's gone to the Supreme Court in notification. What this bill is an attempt to find some way around, some way to limit the constitutional rights of a minor to privacy in dealing with a doctor and medical needs, and the constitutional right a minor has to be protected to have the choice of whether or not to terminate a pregnancy. That's all the bill is. It is an attempt to get around the Constitution. Section 2 certainly doesn't do it and will not result in notification to parents. If you read the Supreme Court decisions and the dissenting opinions, it's very clear, and it's an absurd way to write legislation.
Mr. Chairman, I request a roll call if I haven't done it before.
15 hands. Same 15 hands to be a roll call. Mr. Swanson.
Well, Mr. Chairman and members, and Representative Elioff, I'd like to mention a couple things about this bill and the process with a rather emotional type of bill. First of all, I would like to commend the author in making every effort this time into trying to get a constitutional bill as far as the process went. I am concerned, though, that as we went through this process in committee, that the members first in the subcommittee worked hard on the bill, and the day after they moved the bill out of subcommittee, they were asked to take on good faith in full committee. We had to substitute a complete new bill in full committee because somebody else had looked at it and thought it might need a change. And we accepted that in that process. Once again, as we came to this floor, we received a completely new bill, which we were asked to act on by good faith, and which we did. There were several things that I had asked the author to do and those that put this bill together, and the one thing I asked him to do is not delete everything from the enacting clause, because mechanically the process that the desk had is nothing fit. I think that in learning to deal with this, we have to have trust with one another and use the legislative process and ask, if you don't know how to draft a bill, to use our staff, either Representative Elioff's or the Health and Welfare Committee staff, which we tried to make efforts so that a bill would be complete so you could all understand. I think that we have been asked to be flexible and accept other people's work from the outside of this legislature at full faith and not make any amendments to. And the majority of us have abided by that process. But that faith hasn't gone two ways, and we have turned down at least one amendment that perhaps would have made this a stronger bill. In the future, We have to develop a faith amongst one another so that you can accept an amendment or accept judgment and thinking that might be right. We accepted one amendment from Representative Elioff that could have made this a constitutional question. And so I hope that in the process in the future that we can develop more faith in one another and use the legislative process the way it ought to be used, and we will have more constitutional bills that won't be defeated in court if you use the expertise that sits on this floor. And Representative Elioff, I know that you tried.
Question recurs and the motion, Mr. Elioff, that when this committee to arise, House File 284 be recommended to pass. Clerk, take the roll. Clerk, close the roll. Be 97 ayes and 19 nays. Motion carries. Mr. Aiken.
Chairman, I move the committee do not arise.
Mr. Aiken moves the committee do now arise. All those in favor indicate by saying aye. Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Mr. Aiken.
Chairman, I move the report of the committee of the whole be now adopted.
Mr. Aiken moves the report of the committee of the whole be now adopted. All those in favor indicate by saying aye. Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Reports of standing committees. Copy of this report has been placed on each member's desk. If there's no objection, the reports will be adopted. Hearing no objection, the reports are adopted. Second reading of House files.
Second reading of House file number 1445.
Second reading. Motion to resolutions.
Gustafson moves that the name of Clark K. be added as an author on House File number 1470.
There's no objection, so ordered.
Tomlinson moves that Senate File number 1265 be recalled from the Committee on Local and Urban Affairs and be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Mr. Tomlinson.
Mr. Speaker, this is a local bill. It has the recommendation of both committee chairmen.
All those in favor indicate by saying aye. Opposed, nay. Motion carries.
Algren moves that the name of Wigley be added as an author on House File number 1428.
There's no objection, so ordered. Is that it?
Yes.
Any announcements? Mr. Anderson?
Speaker, pursuant to Rule 110, I will call up the following bills for consideration tomorrow. Number 111 on the General Orders calendar. House File 242, authored by Ossoff. Number 119 in the General Orders calendar. House File 1143, authored by Brando.
Mr. Sabin.
Mr. Speaker, members of the House, this is to announce that pursuant to Rule 110, I'll call up for consideration tomorrow House File 1376, Representative Wenzel, which passed out of full Appropriations Committee previously, and also Senate File 359, the Workers' Compensation Bill, authored by Representative Simino, for consideration tomorrow. Secondly, this is to announce a full Appropriations Committee meeting tomorrow at 8:15. Ms. Byrne.
Mr. Speaker and members, there was a commotion early on this afternoon. I thought you should know that American Indian youth gathered together from Little Earth, Heart of the Earth, and some of my people from the Red Schoolhouse banded together, so to speak. It is Indian Awareness Week, and they, in their own inimical way, were joining together with the citizens' lobby and showing us their concern about the state of affairs such as it is.
Any other announcements? Mr. Aiken.
Mr. Speaker, members, it will be our intention to start the special order off of General Orders tomorrow, and so the Rules Committee members be prepared for a short meeting shortly before session tomorrow. We'll send out notice on the room. Mr. Speaker, I move that when we adjourn tonight, we adjourn until 1 p.m. Wednesday, May 6, 1981.
Mr. Aiken moves that when we adjourn today, we adjourn until 1 p.m. Wednesday, May 6, 1981. Discussion, all those in favor indicate by saying aye. Opposed, nay. Motion carried. Mr. Aiken.
Speaker, I move we now adjourn.
Mr. Aiken moves the House to now adjourn. All those in favor indicate by saying aye. Opposed, nay. Motion carries.